The RPG After Years is part of the We Can Make This Work Probably Network. Find out more at probablywork.com.
Hello and welcome to the RPG Golden Years. I mean, After Years. This is your weekly show covering all things RPGs from the past, present, and future. And this, dear listeners, is the Sword of Vermilion review. Hi, yes, I'm Bill, and welcome a fond, warm embrace of the mother back to the golden years. A ye old time when I used to try and play games with Rich, and we used to try and get through a big old list of games. That's almost like 500 games long, and I think we're like under 20 in somewhere. we're not doing very well on the list. Kind of why we changed the show format. Don't tell Scott. Anyway, yes, hello RPGers, and welcome back. Today we're going back to the RPPGY, back to the list, back to the past, and back to the game from the grinder depths of hell. It's the long-awaited review of the 1991 season, the oddest Sega game you'll ever play. It's Sword of Vermilion. But first, here's 7 minutes of death rap metal. Nah, I'm only joking. I know I did that to you on Alandra. I'm not going to do that again. But here's some awesome music they could have used for a much better game. I can't believe it, I'm back on the show, and I can't believe Scott's actually got to the point where he's let me do a solo episode. Yes, I know, what a ridiculous thing, and what a decision he'll live to regret, as I'm sure you'll all agree. So guys, what's going on in my world of gaming? So pretty much my main focuses has been Zelda 2 and the RPG Club, playing World of Final Fantasy. Now, I don't know if this has come across yet. I know, obviously, people on the Discord will understand this, but I am oddly in love with this game. I think World of Final Fantasy is fantastic. I think that's just something to do with me being a dad and having very little time to game, and I can pick it up and just easily make progress in the game. I find the game very simple, easy. I've not had any troubles. I'm not going to lie to you. I've died twice, you know. I think that was mainly just my fault. I wasn't paying attention to my health, and I should have been healing myself. Healing items are very key. I'll give it that. I'll say that. But yeah, I'm very, very much enjoying the game. The stack system, I think, is great. The nostalgia bombs of the Final Fantasy characters is pleasing to me, even though they're all chibi. It's kind of something I'm along with. I'm along for the ride. So yeah, if you're not playing along with us in World of Final Fantasy, I reckon it won't take you very long to catch us up. But yes, very, very much enjoying World of Final Fantasy. And then, as I said, I'm also playing Zelda 2. So for those of you who don't know, I now have a, you know, I don't know. Should I call it a burner feed? It's just a podcast feed where I just do whatever I want. Kind of the main thing is, you know, I'm trying to work through the list of games that we've got. And I also have a pre-list, which used to be a Patreon benefit. Now that we've converted over to RPG The After Years, it's no longer a Patreon benefit. So I'm trying to get those pre-list games done in a fun way. The reviews for the pre-list games, you know, these, when I say pre-list, you know, these are basically NES games. There's a few Master System games and a few other little ColecoVision things splattered in there. But, you know, most of it is games on the NES, like Final Fantasy 1, Final Fantasy 2, Final Fantasy 3, Ghost Lion. God, I want to finish Ghost Lion. but yes, I've been concentrating on Zelda 2 because I started a podcast thing about it. So me, Scott, and lots of other podcasts, Skeleton House, Kylie Kane from the Versian Chronicles, all those sorts of people. We do it in like a book club style, so very much like the RPG club. We do a palace at a time, but people submit their audio reviews for the palace, and then I mix and mash it up into like a documentary style thing. And I've got some really cool music in the background throughout the whole thing. So yeah, if you want to check out the Zelda 2 thing, it's very... I'll say it's a very unique thing. I only know of one other podcast that does that kind of documentary mashup style, and that's Podcasters Assemble, which is another network show. I highly suggest checking out Podcasters Assemble, by the way. We just finished up our Godzilla season. Godzilla Kong season. And we're starting Mortal Kombat. Oh, I'm looking forward to that. But yeah, the Zelda 2 stuff on my Bill's JRPG Adventures and Other Trappings podcast is amazing. And that's going to be coming that's going to be becoming its own thing in the future as well. So look forward to that, people. Look forward to that. Other games. So Disgaea, you know, which is actually, you know, the next game on the list that I'm supposed to be playing. I'm sorry, Generic Fighter. I'm just not an SRPG guy. I don't really like strategy RPGs that much. I play it for little bits at a time. I've managed to now get past mid-boss, which is the first boss. There's 14 chapters. I'm past chapter one. I am going to start making more of an effort to play through that now. Scott's told me off. He's given me a rap on the knuckles. So I ground out a few levels the other day and beat the mid-boss. I'm going to progress in that slowly. But I kind of... Yeah, like I said, I'm not a big fan of SRPGs. They're not kind of my bag. I've got a lot of them on the list, so I'm just going to have to get used to it, really, aren't I? I think Warsong's coming up soon, and that's SRPG. But yes, Disgaea, you know, Disgaea, play it, people. It's available on Switch as Disgaea 1. It's available on PSP, which I think is called Disgaea Heart of Darkness. It was originally a PS2 game. There's just, you know, it is available on many, many platforms across the world. But, you know, most people have Switches these days, and you can get it on the Switch as a Disgaea 1 complete and play along with me very, very slowly. Actually, it depends. If Scott starts playing along, I may pick up the pace, or I may just procrastinate like I normally do. Anyway, so after that, we've got Live Alive and then Metal Max Returns. And then finally, we get back to a list game where we play Shining in the Darkness. So that'll be fun. I'm looking forward to Shining in the Darkness. I already have... Scott, you'll be pleased as well. I already have a guest host lined up for Shining in the Darkness. Scott doesn't like me doing solos. He doesn't like me going solo. He thinks it's weird. I think it's weird too. But, you know, I'm kind of used to it now. That's that stuff, guys. So let's talk about the save state of the podcast, shall we? So, my fun little RPEGers, we have many, many Patreon benefits for here at RPG The After Years, including early episode access, ad-free episodes, and you also get the option to participate in live shows if you want to, and you also get extra reviews and so much more. Scott is just pumping out those extra reviews, man. He just loves playing the non-RPG stuff. If something hits the scale and is an RPG, it's going to be on the main feed. If it hits the scale and it's not an RPG, Scott's going to do it for the Patreons. And there's a lot of stuff on there, so if you want to check that out, I thoroughly suggest checking it out. There's also the Aftercast, and there's also you can participate in nominating and voting for the game that we play for our next RPG club. So I think we've only got a couple of weeks left on World of Final Fantasy, maybe about a month or so until it's finished. So yeah, if you want to come in and get involved and try and help us pick our next game, because I think I'm going to pick something horrible, you know, just because that's what I feel like. What did I say the other day? Saga Frontier, the Fuse Saga. I was thinking doing that one. that could be quite funny. but yes, that's it. But that's it from the Stay State podcast. I thoroughly recommend checking out our Patreon. Links are in the show notes below. Now, let's take a very quick break. We'll have a word from our from the network and from our sponsors. And then, people, we will get into the meat of Sword of the Million.
Nothing in this world can prepare you for this. You have been chosen by the Elder Gods as a representative of Earthrealm to record in the podcast of the century. Every season, the best podcasters from around the world are assembled to review, reminisce, and riff on a popular franchise. On the latest season of Podcasters Assemble, with the imminent release of the latest highly anticipated Mortal Kombat film, we're taking a look back at all the movies and games of the Mortal Kombat franchise. Choose your mic. Together, you will be facing off against a gauntlet of films. 1995's Mortal Kombat, 1997's Mortal Kombat Annihilation, 2020's Mortal Kombat Scorpion's Revenge, and finally, this year's release of Mortal Kombat in theaters and on HBO Max on Friday, April 23rd, 2021. Go to probablywork.com for more information on how to submit to this or future seasons of the show and listen to the latest episodes of Podcasters Assemble. Mortal Podcast!
Hey folks, my name is Brett and I'm one of the hosts of Skeleton House, an audio-only Let's Play podcast where my two friends, Jess...
What is happening? Oh my god!
...and Steve...
Even he looks spooked.
...play through video games, and I edit them, add context, and act as your eyeballs. Also, we have a cat. Come check us out at skeletonhouse.budsprout.com or look up Skeleton House on your favorite podcast app. Or your least favorite podcast app. I'm not here to tell you how to live your life.
So, let's get down to this, people. Let's learn about the history of the fantastic Sword of Vermilion. And yes, I said fantastic. I mean that. Designed by a gentleman called Yu Suzuki, who would also go on to direct Shenmue 1 and 2. So, you know, this guy's got some creds, man. And he worked with his AM2 team. And this was his first console-exclusive game with his AM2 team as well. And the soundtrack for this game, which is amazing, by the way, was composed by the legendary Hiroshi Miyachi, I think is how you pronounce it. He's a long-time collaborator with Suzuki, and he's done some games like Outrun, Fantasy Zone, and more famously, the Sonic the Hedgehog music. Yeah, so again, music in this game is great. The game features three different types of play styles, with this sort of like overhead town, which is kind of the classic RPG looking thing. We're going to these big action scenes for the fights where you're in a big sort of, it's almost like an arena type thing it throws you into. And then you've got first person mazes. And you've also got side scrolling boss battles. They were trying to do a lot in this game, which diversified its appeal beyond the standards at the time. And Sega of America was kind enough to include a 106-page hint book, just in case you got lost. But I advise of just going to mikesrpgcenter.com, as it has excellent maps for this game. Love a good map, people. Nintendo Switch click. Now, also, one of the things that this game was famous for was the fact that it was included in the Genesis Does What Nintendo Don't campaign. And there was a huge advert, which you can easily find on the internet these days, where it shows some amazing scenes from the game, where it shows, you know, it has this big picture of you battling this ginormous dragon. Yeah, there's just like this and a couple of other screenshots of the towns and things. Yeah, if I saw this advert, I'd be like, holy shit, I want this game. And it's kind of a strange one when it comes to the reception to the game, but I'll get to that later on. So, let's talk about the game, shall we? The game itself. Game is set in a world without a name, where the town names are vaguely familiar. I mean, there's a town called Hastings, and I've been to Hastings in real life. You know, I stayed there for a weekend in a caravan when I was really little with my aunt and uncle. And it's a lovely place, Hastings. You know, it rained, but then it generally rains anywhere in the UK for most of the time. So that's not surprising. But yes, a lot of the town names in Sword of a Million are very familiar to me. They very much sound like places that actually exist in the UK. So you kind of feel like they were going down, you know, going down that line of things to do. It's very much as a... the gameplay kind of works in a very Dragon Quest style menu, as in Dragon Quest 1. You've got buttons to select to do various things, but the stats screen is an absolute joke. There's like 4 or 5 pages you have to scroll through to get back to the beginning screen. So you have to keep clicking C to go to the next screen and screen and screen and screen. And then all of it closes at once. So if you tapped it too quickly, it's all gone. Very, very frustrating. The menu in this game is the worst thing about it. It is a joke. It is a horrific thing to behold. But yeah, the first playstyle is the overhead view. And this is mostly active when you're in towns and such, and when you're in battles, you get a sort of overhead down view and you can see all the enemies around you. But it's kind of like the battle's a bit more 3D isometric as compared to the towns. Much like any other RPG before it. However, once you get out of a town into the world map or dungeon, the perspective switches to a first-person view, in which it imitates games such as Might and Magic and The Bard's Tale. So you're in a 3D dungeon crawler, for instance, much like in Phantasy Star 1, where you get into these 3D dungeons. But let's be clear, people. This is not of the quality of Phantasy Star 1. And Phantasy Star 1 was a Master System game, the generation before this. And it did 3D dungeons much better. You know, didn't have the map. This one has a little map as you go around, and you can pick up items to then be able to see the map, and you have to also use a lamp to light it up or some magic spells. We'll get to that. You have to collect these maps, or you find people and talk to them, or open up treasure chests. So sometimes you have to wander around just until you figure out where you are. So yeah, sometimes you'd walk into a dungeon, it'd be blank, you'd light your lamp, and then there's like a little glow around your character, but then that doesn't help at all. Like, you can literally just see one screen, like one tile around you, as it was on the map. So you can see where there are walls and doors, but only immediately next to you. So you have to wander around aimlessly until you find a chest with a map in it. It's a pain in the arse, I'll be honest with you. It's a pain in the arse. The interface is just so annoying, because like, to open up a treasure chest, like I just mentioned, is a multi-step process that requires you travelling through more menus than is absolutely necessary. I'm ripping on this game so much. I enjoyed this game, don't get me wrong. But the menu system was just a hot pile of dog shit. So you have to open up the menu. You have to select open chest. The chest opens and the screen says, you know, this chest contains 10,000 kim. And you're like, brilliant! Then you wander off and then you're like, hang on. How comes I've only got 4 kim in my inventory? You have to wander back to the chest. Open up the chest. Chest contains 10,000 kim. Okay, open up the menu again. Take take the Kim. Oh, it's so frustrating. Every time, open chest, read what's in it. Let's open up the menu. Select. Choose. Take. Oh, God damn it. So, so frustrating. The translation too is fairly middling. You know, there wasn't much in this game to translate. So they weren't too bad, you know. But, you know, I didn't really spot any obvious grammatical errors, but I'm not the person who would spot those. Like in some of the old NES games that you get. But there are some awkward NPC conversations scattered throughout. In one of the taverns you come to, a bartender tells you, if you're not hungry, then I can't help you. It's like, what? It's like, yeah, fair enough. And yeah, there are these conversations like this just scattered throughout the game. And it makes it very entertaining to see what people have to say. But yeah, it's just a bit bonkers. And there's also a town where all the men have been captured, or some sort of horseshit like that. And if you talk to the women in the inn, she asks you if you want a warm and comfy bed tonight. If you say yes, she hits you and you black out. You come to and she tells you not to sleep until you saved all the men. It's just like, what is going on in this game, honestly? It's just, yeah, crazy little stuff like that. It is fun. I'll give it that. But yeah, once you get to a dungeon, you better have a lantern or a lighting spell, because dungeons are pitch black. These can expand. The worst thing is that these expire as well. They don't last. They run out, people. Which means it will just leave you to die in the darkness of a depth of a dungeon. Which might stir some memories of adventure games. yeah, but you know, eventually you can find some candles which do last forever. When running around in these mazes, you'll occasionally be yanked into random battles, and these, you know, like the town scenes overhead, you know, kind of legend. That's it, Legend of Zelda. That's the best way of thinking of it. The original Legend of Zelda, where you know you've got your screen and you've got your enemies running around you, and you get this big, like, there's loads of enemies on screen. You can get up to 8, but it's random as well. Like, you'll get into a fight, and they'll say you'll be in a fight against scorpions, and there'll be either 1, 2, 4, 8, 6. Like, it's just completely random how many you get into. And so you can easily walk out onto the world map for the first time, get into an encounter with 8 slimes, and just be mauled to death instantly. it's a bit strange, and it's weird, because like I say, because it's similar to a Legend of Zelda 1 works when you're fighting things. You know, you can walk around, just hit them with your sword. It feels great at first. Doesn't look as good and run as smoothly, but it does feel good. But there is really bad hit detection, and like your sword is like only 4 pixels long, and it makes it very, very hard to actually hit things. Once you get your magic, it does make life a lot easier, because you can throw projectiles at the enemies or just use an attack all spell, which, you know, they come much later in the game, but that really helps destroy a lot of your opponents. And like I said, when you've got 8 opponents, you kind of need something that's like a mob killer, as it were. And yeah, and most of the spells have silly nonsense names, but whatever it was called, the boomerang spell was my game changer in this game. It would just wipe a field of enemies. Once I learned this boomerang spell, I think it's called wind or something weird like that. But it was like the second or third version of wind. But yeah, just all these boomerangs would fly out in every direction, but they were homing as well. They would go after the enemy. And so it was just like, that was it. I could finally spam my grinding sessions. So you walk out of town, you get into a couple of fights, just spam, spam, spam that boomerang spell. Just hang around so you're close to a town. Once your MP starts to get low, head back into town. An inn. Yeah, an inn. And yeah, and then that's it. Go back out. Boomerang. And it was great. It would just absolutely wipe the floor with it. Like, it was expensive to cast, but you could get into a good 4 or 5 battles. Nothing would be able to touch you, because the boomerangs were just flying out of you, killing things instantly. Just absolutely brilliant. It made the game so much more enjoyable, because there's a big grind in this. Very, I want to say similar to Phantasy Star 2 level of grind, but I think Sword of a Million's worse. There's a bigger grind session needed in Sword of a Million. It was kind of like, in Phantasy Star 2, you could push through a couple of towns and a few different story events before you needed to stop and really grind out for some money. But in Sword of a Million, no, it's every town. Every town, you have to have a huge grind session in between just to make sure that you are on par with what's coming ahead. The enemy encounter rate as well in this game is so high. It is ridiculous. Which makes things very frustrating at the beginning of the game when you don't have any recovering items or magic. Again, it takes the Dragon Quest way of things, where if you die, you don't get a game over. But it just restarts you back at whatever the last church was where you went to visit. So, by the way, the churches are used for saving your game. You go back to a church and you can save your game there. And you can also pay the guy to remove your poison. I assume you, like, you know, if you've been poisoned, he just sucks it out somehow. but yeah, that's what you do. And then if you get a game over, you end up back at the church. But they've taken half your money. But in Dragon Quest 1, they literally just said, hey, you can go back out there, but we've taken half your cash. Don't die. It's like, hey, thanks, fuckers, I'm trying to save you. But in Sword of Vermilion, the church guy literally just goes, oh, we have brought you back to life, and we've given half your money to the poor. It's just like, the poor, by the end of this game, must have been extremely rich. I'm not joking, but I died enough times in this game that the poor people are like, every single poor person must be like Elon Musk now in this game. It's just, I was giving away money left, right and centre. But it's annoying as well, because most of the time what you need in this game is not his experience points, you just need the Kim. You need to be buying the weapons and the armour at each town to keep yourself on par with the enemies. The enemy range, from your basic blob to big flames, magicians, giant Medusa-like lizards with snake for hair. And yeah, it's just, and like I say, it's just got a random number from 1 to 8, and you get a possible, the possible mobs of 8 are just ridiculous. You just got to run from them at the very beginning of the game until you get the boomerang spell. The viewpoint then switches again when you're fighting bosses, which are, in this game, they're called the Archfiends. The battlefield is a single side-screen view, and you have to fight a giant monster that fills up roughly half the screen. And it's like, so yeah, one half of the screen is a giant monster, and then you've got a tiny little bit of other half of the screen to suddenly go left and right on. And considering this is a boss, and this is the only time you do this, the first time it happens, you're a bit like, what? How do I move forward? Like, I can't... Can I jump? No, I can't jump. I can duck. No, I think you can. Can you jump? I can't remember if you can jump now. But yeah, and then it also, you've got a big message at the bottom saying, can't use magic. So it is just literally just hit it with a sword until it dies. yeah, and he's got these big 16-bit sprites, which are kind of the sort of things that used to populate the arcades. And obviously Suzuki did used to work on arcade games before he started this, which is his first console exclusive. So you can see where their inspiration has come from. And yeah, they were generally not heard of at the time, having this huge sprite on screen to battle. You normally had like things that were quite equal to you at least, or, you know, I mean, it took up so much of the screen, you know. I'm thinking of games like, I want to say Contra or something, which has like a weird big boss thing at the end that you have to fight. This is just not on the same scale. This is so much bigger. Although your sprite's bigger, I will give that. So maybe it is on the same scale as Contra, but they just made things look bigger. Who knows? that was a bad tangent. But yeah, these were the sprites that they used heavily in the advertising for this game. For, you know, Genesis does what Nintendo don't. Because compared to the NES and what was out on that game console at the time, that screenshot looks so impressive. You know, that is a game seller. Absolutely. Much like the random battles, though, it has its own problems. Oh yeah, you can't jump or use magic, and you can only attack. You can't defend either. And some of these battles for me were just an absolute hair-pulling experience. Especially if you've been in the dungeon for over an hour, screaming at the game because your candle's gone out and you're in darkness, and then you wander into this bastard, and then you duck, destroy projectiles, and it's just... Oh, yeah. That is a good thing, though. If they are firing fire at you, you can actually hit it with your sword, and it'll take it out. So it won't take a hit off you. But man, the timings of hitting this boss and doing everything like that is just ridiculous. Just absolutely ridiculous. So gameplay-wise, you know, like I've mentioned about, you can buy items from shops and stuff. You got your swords, your shields. There's armor. There's, armor that you can equip. There's also this thing called a death sword and a dark sword. And there is actually a trick to these where you can manipulate the game's code in the background in order to make yourself basically invincible. So whenever you equip the Death Sword or the Dark Sword, there's two of them, there's also a Dark Armor, I think, it lowers your stats permanently. It was. I think they said at one point that that was actually a glitch. It was only supposed to lower it for a little bit while you're holding the sword. But yeah, no, they found it would actually lower your stats permanently. But it would also curse you. So kind of the trick is that you have to equip it, unequip it, and then you can either do this at a church and pay the church to remove the curse, but that can get quite expensive. Or later on in the game, you do get a special stick, which you can hit yourself with, and it will remove curses. So once you've got that stick, you can use, you know, keep equipping, unequipping, sticking yourself, equip, unequip, stick, equip, unequip, stick, and your stats will go down, 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 until they drop below the threshold, that they go all the way to the top. Now, you're supposed to, I don't know, I don't really understand why, on the things I read about this was, you're supposed to drop your stats down a lot further than the top version. I don't know why. I think it's to give your character room to grow, so you don't accidentally end up going back to the minimum level again. I didn't really get it. There was like, they said, there was always like, hey, make sure you go down to this level here, and then you'll be fine. So, or maybe like, the glitch breaks the game somehow, if you're in a boss fight and you're well overpowered. I don't really know. I'll be honest with you. But yeah, there is a trick there to make yourself like super defense and super attack. But I did not use it. I did not use that trick. You can also use gnomes, which I forgot what they do. I think they eject you from a dungeon. There's also things that will take you back to the nearest town that you was last in. Like these are just special items that you get. And yet, you know, the leveling system is your classic leveling system. You get EXP and you've got set levels that you go up. But they're all over the place, to be honest with you. and they're a bastard. They're a bastard to get to. It's a long trek to the next level. Let's just put it that way. And yeah, and Kim, finally, the money in the game. Just, yeah, need lots and lots of Quim. Kim. And there was another thing which also I know Deesa has complaints about with this game, where it feels like a quest block or like a bug in the game, where you get to a point and you think, I'm stuck here, nothing's working, I can't get to the next town, I can't do this, I can't do that, I'm just stuck. It's just ridiculous. There was a man in the cave who was supposed to cure my poison, but he wouldn't pop for me, he just wasn't there. Yeah, no. So there was a plant in a cave which was supposed to cure my poison. But every time I went to the cave and I was poisoned, it wasn't there. But, you know, because I'd gone into this town, I'd spoken to this woman who said, I'll cook you a very nice meal. And then you eat the meal. And then she's like, haha, I'm actually an agent of the Dark One, you fucker. You are now poisoned. And it's like an irremovable poison apart from this one herb that grows in this one dungeon. Because that's where herbs always grow. And yeah, I just got absolutely stuck on this thing where I was poisoned, or I had to keep going down to this dungeon. And, you know, I'd done all the things there, but apparently there was one random NPC who's in like the northwest of the town I was supposed to speak to, who I don't think she even told me about the thing in the dungeon. I think she literally just says, oh, you've been poisoned and it can't be removed. You know, there was another guy who told me there's a herb in the dungeon. But no, I had to speak to this woman in order to have all the bits in a row for that thing to actually pop and open. I had another one of these as well, where a man was supposed to be in a cave and he just wasn't there. And there's also this guy who's he's supposed to sell you the pass to the last town. But unless you speak to one random character in a different town, he wouldn't sell you the pass. Like, I get it, you know, it's the way of the olden days where you have to speak to every NPC. But this was just, I'm good at that. I spoke to loads of NPCs. If I was stuck, I went around the entire town speaking to every NPC. But the fact I was supposed to go three towns back and speak to someone there to get him to sell me a pass to get into the last town of the game. Fuck you, Sword of a Million. Fuck you. Thank you. So, that was the gameplay. And I'm sure you're dying to know. Bill, tell me, what's the story of Sword of Vermilion? And I'll tell you, the game loads up. There's lightning, there's thunder. Dramatic scenes are about, are afoot. It looks amazing. It sounds pretty damn good. There is a sword on the edge of this big hill stuck in a stone, which I'm not sure has anything to do with the story, but damn does it look cool. But yeah, you know, the sword may be stuck, may not be stuck. There's no telling how tight the stone's grip is. But, you know, a good chunk of the sword is definitely hanging out the inside of that rock. And the stones, you know, just purple clouds are going everywhere. Land hovers out in the sky and the clouds. It just looks so good. But it's King Arthur at 2,000 feet and it's Sword of Vermilion's title screen. Brilliant. Then you get some text. There's some jerk called Sarkon, who's of the Carfina Sarkons. There we go. And they busted into Excalibria, which is Excalibria's hometown. And they killed King Eric dead. Yeah, the king was called Eric. Bad guy's called Sarkon, but the king's called Eric. So the king fobbed off his firstborn son, Dave, or, you know, whatever name you happen to pick, off onto his right-hand fella, Blade. What a cool name. I assume it's Wesley Snipes who's going to play him in the movie, who just barely made it out of the castle before it burned to the ground. Blade eventually ends up in the town of Wycliffe. There he raises the prince as his own son for 18 goddamn years. On the day of Blade's death, Blade tells the prince of his true destiny. And here is where you step into the young man's shoes to take revenge against Sargon. So, what's actually happening? So, King Eric, King Eric V and King Sargon were close friends. And they went out on an adventure to sort the 16 rings of good and evil to bring peace and balance to the realm. However, the rings of evil changed King Sarkon, and he led his army from Carfina to invade Excalibria. The defenders were overwhelmed, and the castle of King Eric the V collapsed. Eric the V summoned his bravest, strongest, most faithful warrior Blade to entrust his infant son with an ancient family heirloom, the Ring of Wisdom. Start off with one of the rings. King Eric ordered Blade to save himself and the child before perishing while the castle burned. The remaining rings of good were scattered throughout the realm by King Sarkon to deter anyone from utilising the rings. Seems like a bad plan, you just keep holding them, wouldn't you? King Sarkon turned the infant prince's mother into living stone, and he vowed to use all of Carfina's power and influence into finding the boy. So, you want to find all the rings and at some point rescue a princess, which wasn't mentioned at the beginning, but you kind of have to do it just in the middle of the game. You have to kill Sarkon, who claims to be banging your statue mum, which seems very strange. Then you have to free your mum, and then you spend the title sequences hugging that said princess who you rescued halfway through the game, who wasn't really seen anywhere at the end of the game. You know, I'm not even sure if it is the princess you're hugging. Just suddenly there's a girl, you're hugging it, and it goes back to like the sword in the stone scene where you looks like you've got your back to a castle, you've suddenly got this like portrait of the man, he's hugging this woman. Nobody's really, really sure what's going on there. Now, this game contains an RPG trope. There's a big bad guy, you've got the King Arthur, you know, the evil overlord, Sarkon. You know, thou must go on your quest for some unexplained reason, just because I've told you so on my deathbed. The enemies are just like mostly the same throughout the game with basic colour swaps. Everything's better with princesses. They just throw in a princess for some reason. Every town is a fetch quest of some sort that you have to do. The bloody treasure chests that are just around, you know, everywhere. You get penultimate weapons, the playable epilogue, which is actually brilliant. You know, I will say that. So after you've actually killed Sarkon at the end of the game, and I'll get to him in a minute about the boss fight, you actually get to go, you have to travel back to Excalibria. To Carthena, the bad town, because that's where your mum is. And so you travel all the way back, and your mum's there, and she's been released. But as you're travelling back through the overworld, there's no enemy encounters. So all the enemies are gone. You know, all those random battles are just gone. And I really liked that. It was kind of like you get to see the world. And all the NPCs' dialogues have changed. Now, I only went to the last town and just spoke to a few people on the way in and spoke to some guards. Because once you speak to your mum, that's the end of the game. But yeah, apparently every single town has... every single town, all the characters have got brand new dialogue to be like, hey, you saved the world. Well done, boss. Give me a high five. She's like, yeah, cheers. Final trope I'll just throw in here. Yeah, the main character's got blue hair. Yep, that's a thing. So, yeah, getting to the end of the game, and you have to fight Sarkon. And the guy is a beast. I hated that fight, to be honest with you. He's this big three-headed Hydra dragon that flows fire at your feet. So you have to try and get in there and hit his head 3 or 4 times to knock each head off until you've knocked them all off, and then that's it, he's dead. But it is such a painful battle. Now, I was very much under-leveled, and so I used a save state just before him so that I could... try this battle over and over and over and over and over and over and over again without giving my money to the poor, because, you know, fuck the poor, man. I earn that money. that boss battle was just absolutely ridiculous. I really should have ground up a few more levels. But it was kind of just the game had lured me into a full sense of security. I'd kind of got myself into a good grind point where I wasn't having trouble with the overworld enemies. I got into this dungeon and I wasn't having trouble with the enemies. And then... there are like 4 mini-bosses that you have to do. Because, a lot of the times in dungeons, you have to pick up keys to open up doors and stuff. And this dungeon had, four different levels. And you had to go fight a boss, collect a key, which would then open up a door later on. And then you could do another boss and another key. And then right at the end of the dungeon, there are 4 doors in a row, which you have to open with all the keys that you've collected. So you could have unlocked a couple of those doors and then got stuck at the next one, and you'd have to go back into the dungeon and be like, okay, there's another guy here. But all those boss fights were easy. And there were some boss fights as well during the game, because all these people you're fighting as end bosses, are bosses you'd fought during the game. It's kind of like they've come back and they're slightly more powered up. I wiped the floor of them. I murdered those guys. But got to Sarkon, and he said, ha-ha, I'll be banging your mum. Probably just enraged me too much. Got to Sarkon and he said, I'm banging your mum, I'm actually in love with her, come join us, be my son. And if you say yes, the game just goes okay, then you just go backwards, but the game's still, there's still monsters and stuff around. So then you go back and talk to him and he's like, ah, you can still be my son, and he's like, yes. Then the game's still going on. So eventually you have to say, no, not going to do that. Stop banging my statue mum, you weirdo. I'm going to kill you. But then he kills you mostly. Yeah, that was a bitch of a boss fight. Final note on the towns and dungeons. The dungeons are exactly the same over and over again. Fucking sucks. The towns, though, are really cool, and they've got lovely... they're just like... it kind of looks like it's been made with RPG Maker. You kind of think the people who made RPG Maker, maybe Sword of a Million and Four, that is a good thing to use for, like, you know, different types of houses and churches. that's a good template. You know, you can make all these different towns and then colour palette swap the lot. But I loved the town music. And there was like a couple of different town musics, depending on which town you went into and what the situation was like. And sometimes if when things went a bit south in a town, like one of the towns you go along, I think it might be Hastings, actually gets blown up. Then when you go back there, the music's all creepy. But yeah, the music in this game is generally great. And you would have heard a few clips throughout the review. But yeah, I mean, to really sum up the game, there's no doubt that Sword of Vermillion was a very ambitious game. And it has multiple different play styles, as I've spoken about, to help show itself to be different from the dozens of 8 and 16-bit RPGs from the time. Even today, it just is different to every other RPG I've ever played, certainly. But there are issues in each of them. There's mostly the poor interface, the dodgy controls. I think if these were improved, it would help what was other. I mean, it's a fascinating title. It was a good game to play. You know, Stockholm Syndrome again. By the time we got towards the end of this game, I was loving it. I was really enjoying it. But yeah, it was just a bit of a painful learning process. But again, while I've been thinking, once you've learned it and you've got past all those pain points, it's absolutely fine. It's a bit on the long side. You know, it's approximately 20 hours of gameplay. I'd probably say that's close to what I got. And it gets quite tedious as it goes along. Now, the advertising did say it had 300 hours of gameplay. But no way. You would be so beyond overleveled. It's just ridiculous. I wouldn't suggest playing this game for 300 hours. Never. You know, it just requires a bit of patience to enjoy this game. You have to really, really enjoy the grind for this one. I'll give you that. The reception of this game and its legacy is a bit of an odd one, actually. It was fantastically reviewed on release, which is probably why it keeps showing up on Sega collections. It's been featured in the Sega Genesis collection for the PlayStation 2 and PSP. It was actually one of the few titles that was omitted from a later Sonic's Ultimate Genesis collection that came out on the PlayStation 3 and Xbox 360, which gives you some idea that Sega sort of thought, you know, maybe not this one. But, you know, it plays well enough. It plays well enough on these versions of the game, although apparently the controls and the music is a bit messed up, which, you know, the controls weren't great in the first place. It was also released on the Wii Virtual Console, which has a much better emulation if you want to play it on that. It's also available as part of the Sega Genesis Collection Gold, which is on PC and Switch. If you did want to play it. And those versions as well are very well emulated. But nowadays, people see the issues with the game. There's a lot of people I follow on Twitter who, when this game comes up, they just loved it. They're like, oh my God, yeah, this was my first RPG. I absolutely bloody loved it. And yeah, I can just imagine those poor 10-year-old children playing this game, be like, this is the best. And then there's me playing Sonic. Being like, nah, this is much better. Or Micro Machines 2. Oh God, Micro Machines 2 is great. But, you know, I think nowadays, you know, it's got some good visuals. The music is outstanding. But this game just is not going to be many, many people's cup of tea, I'm afraid. I had a lot of fun with the game in the end. But it did take a lot of perseverance to get to that point. And, of course, the boomerang spell. Everything gets better after the boomerang spell. But would I recommend people play this game? Sadly not. Okay, everybody, let's move over. Let's end this. So in a nutshell, that was Sword of Vermillion. There's not much to say about the game. It's beautiful in some ways, it's ugly in others. It's fun after a while. It's not, you're not going to enjoy it if you start the game up, let's put it that way. you have to push past that pain barrier. Push through the wall, people. You know, you've got to take that silver hair and plant it on your head. But it's just not the best, to be honest. So let's talk about this, yeah? The combat. Let's score this. Combat with your tiny sword, with its terrible hitbox and the enemies coming around you and the mobs, was not enjoyable in the slightest until the boomerang spell. And also less strong mention to the earthquake spell, but it wasn't quite as fun. Earthquake spell was just shake the screen and everything would die. But it would cost all your MP. So fuck that. Combat is going to get a 3, I'm afraid. Just not for me. And as far as gameplay mechanics go, so everything other than non-combat, man, that menu system. Like, I get why, you know, Dragon Quest on the NES had to do what it did with its menu system. But this has taken that menu system and bastardized it and smeared it with feces. And it is just not good at all. And it really hampers the game. And the movement of your character is not great anyway. In the overworld map and in the dungeons, when you're in this like 3D isometric kind of view and you've got your map, the turning is terrible and just the controls are just awful. And I'm afraid it's just going to get a 2 from me. And I think that may be my lowest ever mechanics score. Like, maybe Hydlide got worse, but I just don't know. That's just an appalling menu system. Now, the story. The story was actually vaguely interesting. Now, I kind of mentioned they throw in a princess in the middle, but going from town to town, talking to the people, learning of their plights. Like, there's one where some town has the ultimate healing spell, and they literally do. And you buy it from a girl in a dungeon just before you get to that town. And then you talk to the king, and he's like, hey, that's my ultimate healing spell. You stole it. And he takes it back off you. It's like, fucker. Then you go back, and you find out the girl was actually a demon, and she was one of Sarkon's minions. And then she tries to kill you. And it's just like, there's lots of stuff like that, and it actually makes the fetch questing. They were good fetch quests. You know, it was the same thing every time. Go to a town, pick up quests, go to a dungeon, go back to town, complete quest. But they made the story around it interesting, and they made it always tie in with the 16 rings, Sarkon, your dad, Blade, your mum being banged as a statue. All that stuff was all there. The story was actually well executed. Was it original? Was it interesting? Not really. On that point, I'm going to give it a 6. You know, they did a good job with the story, but it's same old, basically Lord of the Rings on a very basic level. You're Frodo, you got blue hair, you got to go kill a bad guy who's banging your statue mum. I keep saying that. Let's not forget that. She was a statue, he was banging her, right? Let's not forget that. Now, graphics. This is a tough one. Like I said, 3D isometric mazes and overworld, but not as good as Phantasy Star 1, which was a generation before. The boss fights looked really great, and they were on an arcade level of graphics, which you couldn't do on a home console until the Genesis came along. That is amazing. That would be that boss fight scene is 10 out of 10 as far as graphics goes. But everything else is really, really subpar when it comes to graphics. The game was more ambitious in what it was trying to do with other things. It's a tough one, the graphics. I'm going to have to give it a 6 again. Again, it's just, like I say, 10 out of 10 for the boss fights. Absolutely, 10 out of 10 for the boss fights. But, yeah, no, overall, not a great package. And again, the opening scene, when you turn the thing on, and the very end scene after you complete the game, 10 out of 10 again. But, yeah, the rest of it, just no. 6. Music. Now, again, this was... Music is excellent. Absolutely excellent. It was an absolute masterpiece of music. And there are some themes I just absolutely love. I'm going to give it a 9. You know, it's not quite up there on the level of some things. Like, let's say the same composer did Sonic the Hedgehog. Sonic the Hedgehog's getting a 10 out of 10 for music for me. Absolute belter of a soundtrack for Sonic the Hedgehog. But for this, it was really, really good. And yeah, you could just you only want to feel for yourself like, oh man, they could have given this to a better game. But no, they gave it to Sword of Vermillion. And then finally, my overall feel of Sword of Vermillion. Oh, it's a tough one, because I will be honest, I was thoroughly enjoying the game towards the end. Really, really enjoying it. Like, I was actually looking forward to picking it up and playing it. But compared to the first half of the game, where I dreaded every moment of playing the game, like, yeah, I think it's a tough one. And now, because it's been a good few months since I completed the game as well, I've got time to reflect on it. I'm going to say a 5. You know, I'm going to have to hit that middle ground with this one, because hated it. I went from hating it completely to being okay with it, and then to loving it. And I had that huge range of things with it. I think a lot of games always do get more enjoyable towards the end. That's very common with RPGs. Some of them hit this like weird grind spot in the middle, or like with FF8, where you have to just push through the first two discs. But, you know, generally towards the end, most games get good. And I think there's always that crescendo of finishing a game. And maybe that has an effect on your psyche somehow. I'm going to give it a 5. And then finally, the boss. Man, how hard was this boss out of 100 for me? I know the guys normally do this out of 10. I'm sticking to my old RPG star. My old RPG ways. The boss was hard. I had to save Scum my way. Well, not through him. I had to save Scum just before him, just because I didn't want to keep walking through the dungeon over and over again. So, you know, if I had have had to keep walking through the dungeon over and over again, I would have slowly leveled up to the point where he'd been easier. I think Disa finished the boss 4 levels higher. She had to get 4 levels more than me to beat the boss. But, yeah. Anyway. He was a tough mother, though. Like, I was at a good level for everything else, and then I had to fight him. But very much like Neo Xdef from Final Fantasy V in that respect, where, you know, I can go through that final dungeon and not have any problems, and then Neo Xdef's a bastard to me. I'm going to give him a 87 out of 100 in difficulty. And that's, my wonderful friends, give Sword of Vermillion an overall score of 56.66. That's our official score for the RPG after years. Golden years. The years. Years, 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 years. Which leaves it languishing down the bottom of our chart. Just above Advanced Dungeons & Dragons Cloudy Mountain, which was an Intellivision game. And below Monstania for the SNES. How is Monstania down there at 58.33? I loved Monstania. That was a great game. Wow. But yeah, that's officially number 48 on our chart. As far as best games go. So, yeah, guys, let's move on. Let's see what our friends and family thought of this game. So, I've got a review here from Disa, of course, because she's probably the only person who played it. Sword of Vermillion thoughts. The game took some time to get going. First impression years ago of dull colours and lots of brown and not too interesting combat. And it was very slow. But this time, as I got further, you get magic and towns of different colours and music is awesome. And my viewpoint is now completely different. I don't like... how it might seem you have to run into a bug when in reality you just not talk to the people in the correct order or skipped one. Yeah, I spoke about that during the review. There was a I had three of those. I know Disa had two, including the one in the cave, I think she said, or the guy with the pass. I remember we had a long conversation on Discord about how to get past that bit because we both got stuck. But she said, but otherwise, this was a lot of fun. And then I asked her about her final boss fight. She said, I'm four levels above your level now. It's done. The last boss wasn't too bad on my level. The heads were annoying, but he wasn't down. but he went down on a second try. Now it's done. Next stop, Disgaea. And Disa then gave it a score of, she gave combat 6 out of 10, wow. She gave non-combat mechanics 5 out of 10, story 6 out of 10, graphics 7 out of 10, music 8 out of 10, overall enjoyment 7 out of 10, which gives her an overall score of 65. That's like 10 points higher than what I did. So, yeah, she seemed to enjoy a bit more than me. And now, for your pleasure and your listening delight, people, I have an audio entry from our good friend Kylie Kane from the Verzian Chronicles podcast.
Hey, Bill, this is Kylie Kane with my brief, like maybe over a minute tops, thoughts on Sword of Vermillion. Okay, so Sword of Vermillion sucks. Seriously, it freaking sucks. Sword of Vermillion is awful. Don't play it. You'll save your sanity by not playing this game. It's got a really neat concept. You've got a top-down action Legend of Zelda beat-em-up style combat combined with dungeon crawl elements through the town, like a talking Might and Magic style dungeon crawling outside of town. And then you got normal JRPG towns. Oh my freaking Christ, how do you mess up a combat system so hard? How? How do you mess this up? The enemies, like, three-shot you. The first enemies three-shot you. The areas suck. It's hard to see where you're supposed to go. The game is just, it's so dense in how it displays its information that you just want to strangle the developers. Just, oh my goodness. I played this game when I was a kid, right? I really enjoyed this game as a kid somehow, but that's probably because it was one of like the four games in my collection that wasn't Sonic the Hedgehog or football. But I come back to this a few weeks ago, just played through about 2 hours of it just to see how far I could get. And I got nowhere. I leveled up a bit. Only after I learned how to cheese the battle system, which I don't even know if that was actually cheesing the battle system. It was shit. I hated it. I hated this game. And honestly, I don't recommend it. I'm going to give this to you again. I do not recommend this game. My final score is a 2 out of 10. And the 2 points it does get is because the concept is badass. If someone was to take this concept and actually do it correctly, I would love this game. As it is right now, toss this thing in the dumpster fire and watch it burn. Thanks for listening. I'm Kylie Kane from Verzian Chronicles. Bye.
So that brings an end to the Sword of Vermillion review. Thank you very much, Kylie Kane. Thank you for your audio submission for our reviews. I love that, and I'd love more of those in the future, please. Although my ears are still ringing from all your shouting. So, guys, what are we going to do next? Okay, you know, next week, I'm not sure what the guys have got planned, but it will be RPG Club time, everybody. So, you know, I'm currently on track with RPG Club. I'm in chapter 15, and you have to complete by next Sunday. You have to complete chapter 17. Yeah? So 15, 16, and 17, please. And that's completed by Sunday, the 25th of April, because that's when the guys will go live with the next episode. So, again, reminder, I'm doing my Zelda 2 series. Please check it out. It's amazing. And we've even managed to convince one of our Discord people, JS, who's never podcasted before. He is now submitting for the Zelda 2 episodes. And I'm so proud that we've actually now expanded beyond the realm of just podcasters. I love it. I love having people submit to this sort of thing, and I get to edit all in. Hopefully I should have Palace 3 out soon on the Bill's JRPG Trappings and Other Adventures. That's got it wrong. Bill's JRPG Adventures and Other Trappings podcast. But yeah, check it out. It's an amazing, amazing show. I'm so, so proud of it, if you can't tell. So, guys, you know, feel free to rate and review RPG The After Years on any platform that will allow you to. Mostly Apple Podcasts, because it really helps spread the love of the show and get it out to other people. Come join us on our Discord, which, you know, links are below in the episode description. Joining our Discord is great. There's lots of people on there. If you're playing Bravely Default, loads of the guys are playing guys and gals are playing Bravely Default at the moment and absolutely loving it. And they're all talking about all the job classes and everything, and I have no idea what the hell they're talking about. But if you're into Bravely Default, the new one, that's just come out on Switch, you know, come join us on the Discord. As well as myself, Colin, and Disa. Gore, you know what's come out, don't you, people? You know what got released? The Saga Frontier Remaster, which has a bonus character of Fuse, which we haven't played, and so I therefore have not covered on the podcast. I've already done 6 episodes dedicated to Saga Frontier, and I'm now a character that I haven't covered? I can't take it. My OCD can't take it. See, do you know what, people? You know what the saga is? What's a saga? I need a saga. It's the Saga Frontier Fuse, baby. We're back. I'm back. There will be an episode coming. I guarantee it. I promise you here, there will be some Fuse material from me. I promise you.
I need a saga. What's the saga?
Anyway, sorry about that. Patreon. Come join our Patreon, where there won't be any mention of Saga Frontier whatsoever. If you join the Patreon, you can get early episode access, ad-free. You can participate in the live videos, and you can even join us on the show. We've had Drunk Punch Dave join us for the Wild Arms episodes, and we also had a special spotlight with a Generic Fighter, so you can come join us over there. You also get the aftercast episodes, extra reviews, which Scott pumps out like no tomorrow, and much, much more. You know, you can email us at rpgafteryears@gmail.com for any questions, or if you do want to give us some feedback, you know, don't give us a 1-star, just give us some feedback first. And on Twitter, you can find the show at rpgyears. You can find Scott at the Scott Spot. You can find Rich at howblue1569. You can find Jay at jhizzle. And you can find me at metunica, metunnica. So, you know, you guys have listened to me, and briefly from Kai, ramble on for about an hour. So apologies for that. But thank you very much for listening, everyone. I hope you've enjoyed our look into the past of Sword of Vermillion. I hope you look forward to some more saga. What's the saga? I need a saga. And also, don't forget, our next Golden Years game is Disgaea, the very first Disgaea, which has got a few names. I think Hours of Darkness, something else on the PSP, and is currently called Disgaea 1 Complete, which you can get on the Switch. So there's no excuse not to join us on that game, although I traditionally don't particularly like SRPGs, so I'm struggling to get into it already. But, you know, Scott's, he's currently launching a huge stick across the Atlantic to hit me on the head every week when I don't play it. So I have played it. I'm through the first chapter. I'm going to keep going with that. But yeah, lovely to be back, people. Lovely to speak to you. I hope I haven't rambled too much and hurt your eardrums. I hope Kai didn't hurt your eardrums as well. And yeah, I'll see you next time for more RPG The After Years. Bye!
The beast has been slain, the world has been saved, our heroes are basking in the after years. They rest in the tavern for all to hear, their tale of victory and conquered fears, revel in the peace that reigns through the land. All will know it was by our heroes' hands. Here in the after years. Here in the RPG after years. Here in the RPG after years.
This has been a presentation
of the We Can Make This Work
Probably Network.
Follow us on Twitter
at Probably Work for more of our questionable content.
Also, we have a website called probablywork.com.